Thank you. Be seated. The court is ready to hear argument from petitioner in Sorokowitz v. Rhodes.
May it please the court, Mr. Daniel Foster, to present argument for petitioner. Petitioner is reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court, counsel. The issue before the court in this case is very narrow. It involves this court's interpretation of the legislative intent in enacting Section 12.01A, the exemption in the Medical Liability Act, primarily focusing on the word or the use of the word negligence. The ramifications of this case, however, are much broader, and I believe they go to whether or not the Medical Liability Act will have any continued viability as a means of regulating health care liability claims. Plaintiff Rhodes, and I'm sure many other potential plaintiffs' malpractice or medical malpractice claims, would have you read Section 1201 almost literally, as did the Fort Worth Court of Appeals in this case, and as did the Austin Court of Appeals in Wilson v. Chapman, to exclude application of the DTPA to only negligence claims or breach of duty claims, quasi-negligence, such as implied warranties. We believe that a broader interpretation should be applied and is in line with the legislative intent to regulate medical liability claims. A strict literal interpretation of that section would have no effect. The purpose of the Medical Liability Act was to control, to regulate health care claims, to make insurance more available, to reduce the cost, the number of claims.
Are you saying that virtually every doctor, every health care provider makes some type of warranty or representation about the quality of services or something on which a DTPA or express negligence or express warranty suit could be brought?
No, I don't believe that they make any type of warranty. I would say typically they make no warranties.
Well, that was my question. You say if we uphold the Court of Appeal, that's going to be the end of any practical restrictions on health care providers.
The beginning point for their case, however, is a representation. We think it was a representation. We dispute what the representation was, but there was a representation as to what services would be performed and what effect that would have. In virtually every medical health care case, you will probably have representations. It comes in under the informed consent. You have to tell them what you're doing, what the risk, what the upside and the downside is. Once you get a representation, it doesn't take much to turn that either into an express warranty, an implied warranty, fraud or misrepresentation. That's
Foster,
the beginning point.
Excuse me. The Waters case seems to say, out of the Fifth Court of Appeal, it really seems to say that if the duty is established as being the medical standard of care, then this Medical Liability Act was designed to say we're not going to subject the health care providers to some sort of treble damages for failure to meet that medical standard of care. It seems to me part of the problem in this case is the allegation that the doctor set a different standard, not a medical standard of care, but in fact a higher standard. This is not you follow what I tell you to do, you're going to be cured situation. This is, you follow what I say, and it's going to be better than what the medical standard of care would provide to you. They're arguing not that I was going to fix a problem, but that I was going to make what my result was going to be a better result than the standard medical care would require. How does, even if we follow a line of cases that say, if what you're trying to say is that you breached a medical standard of care, then DTPA doesn't apply, how do you get around the allegation that we're not talking about a medical standard of care here? We're talking about a different, higher standard of care that was represented would occur from this particular medical practitioner, and he might have met all the medical standards of care, but he didn't do what he told me he was going to do, which was this higher level. How do you now say that kind of circumstance was also incorporated in this medical liability?
Well, I think there are two points. I think one, we're really talking about the results. In both cases, essentially you're trying to say that the physician warrants or represents the results of his services, whether you say it is a cure of a particular illness, or if it's just that surgery would be good or will be beneficial. I think you're still saying there's a warranty as to the services or the result of those services. And in the Medical Liability Act, the legislative history, I think referring to the amicus brief by the Texas, I believe it was Hospital Association, they referred to two points in the debate on the House floor where basically Representative Ewer, and I believe he was chairman of the committee, said, we all know that people hear what they want to hear. That's when he was talking about cure. That same statement applies when we're talking about any other type of surgery to some person. You're affecting their body. They hear what they want to hear, and conversely, they don't hear what they don't want to hear. They hear the good side, they hear the negative side. Representative Ewer indicated that what we're trying to do is control that type of funding, because that's what's led to the medical malpractice crisis. We've got too many claims, too much awarded in damages. We can't get good coverage.
Well, what remedy is there then if the physician knowingly misrepresents, and there is no question of what he misrepresented, his ability? Is the patient left without any remedy at all?
I believe that there is a remedy that would be provided under the informed consent portions of the statute. And that remedy may be more in the administrative manner. I believe that the statute sets up a mechanism of board to establish the standards, what should be disclosed, should not be disclosed.
Under your interpretation of the law, is it possible to successfully bring an action for fraud against a healthcare provider in connection with the delivery of professional services?
I think that based on the state of the law at the time the Medical Liability Act was imposed or was enacted, that those claims were encompassed by the failure to disclose informed consent issue. So I think that's regulated by the Act at this point, so now I would say
that
there's no.
The answer is no. You cannot sue a healthcare provider for fraud in connection with the delivery of professional services.
Correct.
And that, since we have reference to the Waters case, we're not talking just about plastic surgeons in the circumstances of this case, but if your view of the law prevails, then that means that an older person that is defrauded by a nursing home, they've got no cause of action for fraud.
Under the DDPA.
Or for common law fraud, for that matter. Because they're covered by the same act that the plastic surgeon in this case is covered by. Isn't that correct?
I think that would be correct.
And the same thing would be true of a veterinarian, since the Veterinary Practice Act has essentially the same language, who defrauded a rancher and led to the destruction of all of his cattle. No coverage.
That part, assuming the language is the same and we're not talking about goods provided in connection,
right.
And I think that would be true.
And the same would be true with reference, and I think it comes up in the briefs, Professor Alderman's article in the Houston Law Review, where he talks about a hospital, since hospitals are also covered, that threatens our nursing home, for that matter, to garnish a patient's wages and force the sale of their house on the collection of the bill. That also would not be actionable under the Deceptive Practices Act 1746B12 because it is also drawn into this act by the same language you talk about, isn't it?
I'm not sure that I would agree with that position. When you go away from the provision of the medical services and you turn to the collection of a fee, I think that is distinct. And I would draw the same distinction if you talk about a doctor who sells his automobile. That's not exempt. That's not really what was intended to be covered by the Medical Liability Act, which is the actual provision of the health care services.
So you think then that if this particular plastic surgeon in this case had committed a deceptive act in connection with the collection of his bill for the professional services,
that, the Deceptive Trade Practices Act would still apply?
Yes, I think I would draw that distinction, because I don't think that that is dealing with his professional judgment, the health care services that he was providing, and the result that was supposedly guaranteed or represented.
If it applies then to the collection of the bill, what reason is there for not applying it if he commits fraud in connection with the provision of professional services?
Because the Medical Liability Act was intended to cover the health liability claims with respect to his services.
The commentators, of course, who have written on this, that are referred to in the briefs, have said otherwise. The Austin Court of Appeals has said otherwise, all prior to the convening of the legislature this past time. Isn't the legislature charged with those decisions and has an opportunity to clarify the act if it wants to broaden the coverage of the statute?
Well, I think at the same time this case was pending, and the legislature could assume that this court would reach the decision that we're proposing, that it was intended to be exempted. So I do not believe that that's charged such that they have not made a change and they're acquiescing in those decisions. At the same time, the Waters case was, the Waters decision was also present, which indicated that the DTPA did not apply.
If a legislator, Mr. Uher, as you cited his comments, intends one thing, but the clear language of the statute does another, which is to control?
I think the legislative intent is to control, as set out by this court in Woods versus Littleton. And I think that's a recognition that it's not a perfect world, and through the process, the legislative process, the changes that a statute undergoes, and the English language itself, which can at times be somewhat imprecise, sometimes the final result will not be what they intended, and if we can glean the intent from the statute as a whole, not focusing on one specific provision, that's what should be applied. And I think that legislative intent was to regulate medical liability claims, and it's inconsistent to say that the legislature intended to regulate those claims with the Medical Liability Act, which is somewhat restrictive, and then at the same time allow claims to be brought under the DTPA, which is to be given a very broad, liberal construction. To do that, you circumvent the cap on damages, you circumvent the notice requirements, you circumvent the system that's set up for informed consent. Essentially, you can avoid the entire application of the Act. If you can't prove your negligence case, your medical negligence case, in accordance with the Act, which is essentially the situation here, they initially had a medical malpractice case, they abandoned that, and I believe that the record will show in connection with the motions to reinstate that the statements were, we can't find an expert to testify to the proper standard of care. They abandoned that, but then they come under the DTPA. You just avoided the entire medical liability.
So if we affirmed, essentially what it would mean is that a plaintiff in a medical malpractice case would not have to produce expert testimony pertaining to the applicable standard of care or any deviation by the health care provider?
That's correct. No testimony as to the standard of care, either in the performance of the services or in the disclosure that was given. All you have to have is a representation. And once you've gotten a representation, you can craft that into an argument as to fraud. And I know there's some other elements, but basically your starting point is a representation. You've got your fraud claim that can come from that. The misrepresentation, which I believe is basically the same. Express warranty, implied warranty has basically been kicked out for a different reason. But all of those involve the one representation that was made. When you lose under the DTPA, you can forget the fraud. If you just plead it under the DTPA, you're really not, you don't have to prove scienter, intent. You lose all the protections of the Medical Liability Act. And I don't think anyone here is arguing that there should be a strict literal interpretation, because if we do that, negligence as used in that exception would have no meaning whatsoever, because the DTPA does not create a negligence cause of action.
Well, negligent misrepresentation would be actionable under the DTPA, would it?
negligent misrepresentation would be actionable under the DTPA, but it's not necessary that it be a negligent misrepresentation. Strictly a misrepresentation.
But the provision does have meaning insofar as it applies to negligent misrepresentations as distinguished from the requirement under the DTPA of a higher level of proof for a knowing misrepresentation.
Well, I don't believe that the DTPA requires that you prove the knowing element on the misrepresentation other than in connection with trying to establish a claim for the additional punitive damages.
That's right.
I'm not aware of any element in the laundry list or otherwise that requires intentional misrepresentation or that specifies negligent misrepresentation as a separate cause of action. It's just a representation that's not true. I believe that the only way to affect the intent of the legislature set out in the purposes and findings section is to give the exemption a broad interpretation. And if I could close with Representative Ewer's statement in the debate, and this is found at page 13 of the amicus brief of the Hospital Association. And finally, members, a question has been raised as to whether or not physicians fall within the category of Deceptive Trade Practices Act. And we simply say here that physicians and healthcare providers are exempted, that they are not provided. Those of you that were here in 73 when that law was passed and we were really considering deceptive trade practices as it applies to normal business relationship, a market type of situation of selling goods and services from a store, a service business, et cetera, but not as it applies to physicians. I think that is a very clear description of the intent of the legislature in passing that. And we would request that the case be reversed and the trial court's opinion be affirmed.
Any questions? Thank you, counsel.
The court is ready to hear argument for respondent.
If it pleases the court, Mr. Al Ellis will present argument for respondent.
Your Honors, this is not a health care liability claim, and that's what distinguishes it from a medical malpractice or professional negligence act. This is a claim for violation of the Deceptive Trade Practices Act, and there is no prohibition under the Texas Medical Liability and Insurance Act that prohibits such a claim. Back in February of 1985, my client Janice Rhodes went to see a plastic surgeon in regard to a breast augmentation, in regard to some scars that she had from previous surgery, and representations, misrepresentations, and promises were made to her. It's true that the case started out as both a medical negligence claim and a deceptive trade practices claim. It's also uncontradicted that the medical negligence, professional negligence claim was dropped. The issue is very simple, and that is, can you sue a physician under the DTPA for fraud, misrepresentation, laundry list violations, if there may be some, just like you can sue every other professional and every other individual businessman and businesswoman in this state? And the answer is simple. It's yes. I've been accused of being simplistic by some of the people that filed amicus curiae briefs in this situation, and that may be true. But I think Section 12.01A of the Texas Medical Liability Improvement Act is relatively simple. It says that you can't sue a physician or a healthcare provider pursuant to the DTPA for negligence or damages resulting from negligence. And negligence, in my opinion, means negligence. And there is nothing in the DTPA or nothing in the legislative intent or nothing in the prelude or any place else that says any different.
If there were an occurrence that would fall under both categories, say both negligence and some violation of the DTPA, would the statute preclude that kind of DTPA action?
I think what the Court of Appeals in Dallas in the Walters case addressed that issue very clearly. And what they said was, if you have an occurrence and your allegations of negligence and failure to follow a standard of care, and your allegations of DTPA violations are in essence the same, you're saying a failure to follow the standard of care, then the Texas Medical Liability and Insurance Improvement Act applies, and you don't have a DTPA violation.
And you agree with that?
I agree with that, if those allegations are the same. But if you have allegations that are different, that there is a higher standard of care if you want to, or it's just strictly promises made by a doctor or a physician or a healthcare provider to do something, and they either fraudulently or misrepresent what they're going to do, then that's different. And I think you can have an occurrence and have separate allegations. One might be a breach of standard of care. One might be a misrepresentation or fraud and that type of thing, and then you would be able to follow both causes of action in your claim.
You obviously have to be arguing that a procedure consistent with the standards of medical practice, standards of medical care, which would avoid the claim for negligence under the Act, can still involve misrepresentations as to the outcome.
I think that what you have to argue is, and I think what you have to do is, and it's almost what we did in this case. I don't think you have to do it every time. But you really have to have a separate cause of action and not just say to the plastic surgeon or the healthcare provider, well, you were negligent in the way you performed this surgery, or you were negligent in the way you didn't follow the standard of care and that kind of thing. You really do have to have some facts outside of the standard of care issues in order to pursue the claim.
His position, in essence, is saying, I am going to operate on you consistent with the basic standards of medical practice in this community. And this is going to be the outcome. And he can operate consistent with basic standards of medical practice in the community, but the outcome doesn't even approach what was represented to you.
Correct.
Does your interpretation of this statute render the statutory language meaningless?
I don't think so. I think
what meaning is left to it if we read it as you urge?
Well, by analogy, you have a products liability claim that people allege negligence, breach of warranty, strict liability, and those kind of things. I think under the DTPA, there are many times that you can use a negligence allegation or a negligent misrepresentation, as you pointed out, Justice Doggett, and bring a claim for basic negligence and at the same time have the same facts and some of the same allegations and have a DTPA claim. I think that's possible. Certainly not the norm. I mean, most of the time you're talking about the laundry list or you're talking about breaches of warranty and that kind of thing, but I think it's possible. It doesn't make the statute meaningless. The statute...
Sort of like saying, I've got this machine that I want to sell you, and it operates perfectly, and here's what it'll do, and you buy the machine, it does operate perfectly, but it won't do what they said it would do.
Correct. And the statute, I mean, before they enacted the statute, there were a couple of cases. I think the Texarkana versus Birch case is one that I recall where people used professional negligence claims and made them part of a DTPA, and they in fact were allowed to do both. And I think this statute was trying to say when we have a true health care liability claim, that is a failure to follow the standard of care, a negligence claim, and that kind of thing, you are not going to be able to sue that health care provider for DTPA. And that's what a health care liability claim has been since day one in this state. And the statute is not meaningless by putting that language in there. They're making it clear. If you are saying the doc's negligent, then you can't sue him for DTPA. But
so let me get this straight. Anytime a doctor makes a statement, then if you're bringing a lawsuit, you can look at the DTPA laundry list and see if that statement might fit into one of those categories, like causing confusion about the services.
I think so. Yes, sir.
And it doesn't have to be an intentional statement by the doctor. In other words, you wouldn't read the word negligence to say that, negligence under the DTPA to say that any action you bring under the DTPA for strict liability, for instance, is cut out. You would just say if the doctor's made a statement or has caused confusion, then you can sue.
I think so.
What is a negligent suit under the DTPA then? That's the null set, isn't it?
If you're just talking about pure negligence.
I mean, as you read the statute,
right,
you can't bring a negligent suit under the DTPA. There is no such thing.
Not against the health care provider.
But there is no such thing. There no, I mean, I essentially, what this statute did is say nothing.
I think it, I would agree with that.
It says unless you can bring a suit under the DTPA, you can't bring a suit under the DTPA.
I would agree with that, except I think, as Justice Doggett pointed out, there's a potential for negligent misrepresentation. But
that's
really
what I was just asking.
I really don't think that, you know, if you look at what went on before the statute was enacted, and most of your professional liability claims were just that, negligence claims. But there had been a couple cases out there that said, okay, we can pour this over and you can have a DTPA cause of action. And I think what the legislature was saying when they said if it's negligence, you can't, they're saying you just can't have a strict negligence cause of action and then say, oh yes, and by the way, it's also DTPA. I think they were saying that if you're going to do a DTPA claim, you've got to bring it under the normal, either the laundry list or the breach of warranties or the unconscionability or whatever it is.
Can the court get any help from any other jurisdictions on this matter? Do other jurisdictions recognize a separate cause of action for breach of express warranty, treating it not as a negligence claim, but rather as a contract claim?
To be honest with you, I have not briefed other jurisdictions because of the fact that we are dealing with a specific state statute.
It's not unlike a lot of other state statutes.
I don't know the answers. I haven't looked at that, but because we're dealing with the specific section, and to me that it is so clear that it says if it's negligent, it can't be DTPA. And the case of course, Chapman here from the Court of Appeals in Austin agreed with that, and you can bring a DTPA cause of action. I just did not brief that.
Is there any question but the legislature trying to make it harder to sue doctors when they passed the Medical Liability and Insurance Improvement Act?
I assume it depends on what part of the docket you practice on in that regard. I don't think there's any...
From your standpoint,
from my standpoint,
make a lot harder?
They tried to place restrictions on professional negligence liabilities claims by placing, you know, caps, notice requirements, doing away with certain statutes, and that kind of thing.
Arguably limiting the grounds upon which you can sue?
Well, once again, I don't, you know, that's what they, I don't think that they limited the grounds on which you can sue in a professional negligence claim. They perhaps did away with the discovery rule, and they did, of course, put some statute of limitations and those kind of things, those requirements in there, in order for, for physicians to have some sort of foreseeability as to what they were going to be sued for when it came to the standard of care. The law about standard of care, as far as the physician is concerned, didn't change.
Well,
perhaps the exception of informed consent.
Would you agree with your opposing counsel that under a DTPA case, there's no requirement for expert testimony?
Absolutely.
So, at least to the extent that previously expert testimony would be required to identify the standard of care and the deviation, if you're right, then it's a lot easier to sue doctors than it was before.
The only difference is that in a DTPA claim, the standard of care is meaningless because that's not the issue in the DTPA claim. The DTPA claim is, did you violate the laundry list? Did you make an express warranty? Did you act unconscionably or whatever? And therefore, I don't have to have any evidence at all about standard of care, and neither would the other side, because the doctor is being treated just like the rest of us in this state, and that is, did you violate the deceptive trade practice?
So even if the physician brought in testimony that everything he did and said complied with the applicable standard of care, he could still be held liable under the DTPA for if the jury just said, we think you made a misrepresentation?
Absolutely, and I think I'd stand up and object to any evidence about the standard of care, because it's not the issue in the DTPA case.
We're talking not about the quality of the performance. We're talking about representations as to the result of that performance.
It could be the result.
This will be the outcome. This is what will happen. It's irrelevant to the standard of care. And if you want to bring in evidence standard of care, it might be admissible to say, hey, I did what the profession dictates. In
right.
This area, the question is whether the representations made on the basis of that are misrepresentative
outcome that is sought to be got. The other side talked about some of the legislative history relating to the Texas Medical Liability Insurance Improvement Act. Do you have any of the legislative history on the Deceptive Trade Practices Act as far as the intent of the legislature and excluding professions generally, or the medical profession in particular?
I don't have any at all. I didn't do that research. I'm not aware of anything in the statute itself that excludes professionals.
Were there efforts during the course of this legislation to exclude professionals from its coverage?
I just don't have the answer to that question. I just don't know.
There were some of us who were there when it was done, I'll tell you where.
Probably know better than I do.
Mr.
Ellis,
if a patient has surgery and everything proceeds apparently normally and the doctor examines them, oh, you're fine, you can go home today, you're just going to do real well. You're one of the best patients I've ever had. This has just been a wonderful case. And he walks out and the patient starts to get up and falls over dead. Got a cause of action against that?
Probably not under those circumstances. I think, again, you have to treat the physician.
Well, medicine is very imprecise science. A doctor can say, we have done all these things, and everything, you're just supposed, you're going to be well, everything will be fine. And then it turns out, for whatever reason, that that's not true.
I don't disagree that medicine is an imprecise science. I would say to the doctors, don't make promises and warranties that you shouldn't make.
You mean my doctor shouldn't say, come on, Jack, you're going to be fine? You ought to say, well,
I know one thing. My doctor would never tell me I'm going to be fine. But, I mean, every case has its own facts, of course, Your Honor, and I'm joking about it. But that kind of a situation is not the kind of situation. I guess, yes, you could stretch it and say, well, that's a DTPA claim. What we're talking about here is situations when doctors go not in compliance with the standard of care, but decide that they're going to do something else. And let me give you an example. I mean, all of you are aware of the massive advertising that occurs now with regard to some healthcare providers, plastic surgeons, ophthalmologists, nursing homes, hospitals, and that kind of thing. They are in a business market, and they are marketing their talents, just like every businessman and many lawyers are, and that type of thing. And so why should they be protected in that marketing arena? If they're going to make promises and warranties and that kind of thing to patients, why should they be protected in that arena, not the standard of care arena, from the DTPA? And they shouldn't. And I don't think this court would want them to be. And the legislature, I say, didn't want them to be because they specifically said if it's a negligence cause of action, you can't bring it. And the Chapman case said that. And there are other cases that said that. We would respectfully say that the Court of Appeals in Fort Worth was correct in its holding. It was a limited holding. It correctly interpreted Article 1201A and said negligence means just what it says, negligence. And if it's a non-negligence case, you may sue a health care provider for DTPA violations.
How do you separate the representation case from the case where a patient who does not end up as well as he had hoped, thinks he heard, wants to think he heard the doctor say at some point that you're going to be back, that you're going to be well.
Mm-hmm.
And really there's nothing to the case but whether the doctor followed the standard of care. But if the patient could say, but I remember on one occasion he told me, do this and it's all going to be better. And that turns it into a DTPA case. So how can you draw the line?
It's real easy to draw the line. Those are evidentiary. Those are allegations, and that's evidence. And if a person is bringing a cause of action, such as they were in the Waters case in the Court of Appeals ruling down in Dallas, if they're bringing that kind of cause of action and they're making the same allegations and they're saying these same things mean negligence and these same things mean DTPA, a trial judge can take care of them. But if you say that under no circumstances can you sue a health care provider for a DTPA violation, look at all of the other possible misrepresentations and fraud and laundry list violations that you are excluding, just because in that area it might be a tough call for a trial judge to make.
But what you said, trial judge make the call. Trial judge make the call after discovery and a jury trial. I mean, in this type of case, if the doctor says you're going to get well, I'm going to make you better. You need to do this, and you'll recover. I mean, that's going to be a cause of action, if not.
Just the statement, you're going to get well, that's going to be a cause of action? It could be. Could be.
I mean, that's just a...
The other side of that...
Under the way you slice it, that's including so that...
You think don't
absolutely, but if you, as I said, if you're in the arena and the trial judge is making the call and he's heard the evidence and you're presenting both cases to that trial judge, he's going to make some decisions as to whether or not, yes, you really are a DTPA claimant.
I don't understand the trial judge.
If I bring my
call, it doesn't seem to me like it's a legal question. It becomes a factual question under your interpretation.
Well, subject to special exception, subject to instructive learning, subject to judgment NLV, whatever. But if you say that, if you say that, all I'm saying is if you say I can't do it at all, a patient can't do it at all because he or she happens to be a patient with a doctor, then you're saying that if there are misrepresentations, if there is fraud by a physician, if there is a violation of a laundry list, you can't bring that cause of action.
Isn't it possible to have a middle ground and read negligence into some of the DTPA laundry list, or read it into each one? If something said negligently, that's precluded. If it said intentionally or with an effort to defraud or bring in business and hope for the best, that it is not excluded?
I suppose that's possible, but once again, I think that the DTPA was not a statute for the purpose of punishing, if you will, negligent-type claims. It was one for the fraud, the misrepresentation, the laundry list claims. And so, therefore, I contend it's different.
What is a misrepresentation or fraud here?
I'm sorry?
What is a fraud or misrepresentation here?
In this particular case, the allegations in this particular case of the patient were, number one, I'm going to do a breast augmentation on you. You bring in a picture from Playboy. It's how you want to look, and you're going to look like that. And number two, we're going to revise that scar, and it's going to look like a little thin T line. You're not going to be able to see it, and you're going to be able to wear a bikini, and et cetera, et cetera. Now, those are allegations. We didn't try this lawsuit. And so there's a lot to be developed here. But those were the allegations of the promises made by this particular doctor.
So she didn't look like the Playboy model, and the scar is a bigger size or not the same shape she wanted. That's a misrepresentation in this case.
That's correct.
If the law is as you argue, there is some danger that a health care provider's comforting words might be arguably misrepresentation under the DTPA. Expressions intended to comfort someone, make them feel better, have a therapeutic effect in and of themselves, could arguably come under the DTPA. But if the law is not, as you argue, then no matter how outrageous the representation, the misrepresentation, or the distortion that's foisted on the health care consuming public, there would be no remedy with it.
That's correct. Thank you.
Well, this statute says it excludes negligence action under the DTPA, but the whole concept of an express warranty is outside the DTPA. Is there anything in this statute, however it's read, that would eradicate that cause of action?
The express warranty? I don't think so. Now, the statute governs informed consent and specifically what is required, and it's exclusive, but I pointed out in my supplemental brief, I think it's the Milicinos case, that also pointed out and ruled, the Court of Appeals ruled, that yes, you can bring a cause of action for violation of Article 6.02 of the statute, the informed consent part, but also if you have fraud, just common law fraud, you can bring that cause of action against the doctor too. It doesn't preclude that. And so there's nothing in the statute that precludes an express warranty as far as a physician is concerned, if they decide to make that kind of a warranty.
Any other questions? Thank you, Ken.
Could you join a claim for informed consent lack of informed consent and a DTPA claim in the same case? In other words, the DTPA claim would be you're going to turn out one way, but the informed consent other side of the coin is the doctor never told me I could have turned out this bad.
The Melissinos case that I cited in the supplemental brief allowed the joining of an informed consent claim with a common law fraud claim. So I would say that if you can do that, yes, you could do the informed consent with the DTPA claim. That'd be possible.
Any other questions? Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Initially, this case started strictly as a medical malpractice action. It was not until, I think, approximately 1 year later that there was an amendment to add DTPA causes of action.
Let me understand for sure your position. If someone holding a physician's license says, you take this weight loss program for 2 weeks, and I guarantee you, you lose 50 pounds, and you do that, and there's no question that the weight loss program is administered in a proper way. There's no negligence in the administration of it. But you don't lose 50 pounds. You don't lose but 2 pounds. You can't sue the physician for fraud or breach of an express warranty or a violation of the DTPA.
I think in that situation, you would be able to sue the physician for each of those claims. If you're dealing with the sale of the product, and the benefits, the qualities, you've moved away from the services and you're talking about a product.
What's the product?
In that case, the weight loss program. Maybe I misunderstood.
You
were just talking about following advice with respect to...
No, the weight loss program. But what's the difference between the weight loss program and this surgery?
If we're strictly talking about... To be sure I understood the question, we're not talking about whatever the Jenny Craig or one of the diet programs where you actually buy a diet. But if we're just talking about the doctor saying you need to eat this, this, and this.
No, he says you come in, I'll put you on a program, I guarantee you stay on this program 2 weeks, you lose 50 pounds.
It involves his health care services, his professional judgment as to the results of following his advice. Now, I'm saying that Medical Liability Act, it would be precluded under the DTPA. You'd have to go under the Medical Liability Act and either establish lack of informed consent or negligence with a medical expert who testifies to the standard of care.
Medical Liability Insurance Improvement Act does not exclude causes of action for common law fraud, does it?
Not with respect. I think at the time the act was passed, that common law fraud in connection with the services and the results of the professional services, I believe that was intended to be covered under the Medical Liability Insurance Improvement Act.
Can you cite a provision of the Act that does that?
Specifically refers to it, no, but I believe based on the state of the law, and I think that's probably better set out in the Medical Protective Amicus Brief. Than I would be able to state at this time.
The distinction, of course, is between excluding a common law cause of action and excluding a statutory action under the DTPA. But you're saying for all practical purposes, you can't sue a doctor for anything except negligence.
In connection with the provision of his services, his health care services, and his exercise of professional judgment, the results of what he is to deliver, yes, that's true. I think the intent of the statute is to cover that. And the complaint in this case is with respect to the results to be obtained, to be achieved. One other element one question that was posed was whether there was any other statute, and I forgot to refer to the change in section 26.01, the statute of frauds, under subsection 8, an agreement, promise, contract, or warranty of cure has to be in writing in order to be enforceable. And I think that addresses the fraud issue. Unless that promise or representation is made in writing, the
respect to his services. It's unenforceable. That provision was enacted at the same time as the Medical Liability Act, Medical Liability Insurance Improvement Act, and I believe that's further indication of their intent to cover this whole area of health care liability claims.
Were there any express warranties in writing in this case?
Absolutely not. The only warranty, the only warranties and representations that were pled were oral. This is based on the pleadings that they're considered broad enough to include written, that it could be set down strictly on the issue of whether there were any written guarantees under that provision. But no, the state of the record is that the only representations made were oral. Further, in referring to the amendments to the Act that were recently enacted, there are further restrictions on claims against health care providers that if we accept the position that this exclusion does not apply, we just lose. And those are in connection with medical expert testimony as prerequisite to filing your suit. I believe there are restrictions on the amount of discovery. There are probably other changes in the Act, further regulation of the Act, that if we allow a DTPA claim based on the same guarantee of results, they're just avoided. They're not there. It emasculates that.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court will take another brief recess.
Yeah, thank you.